Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the Hometown Roofing Pop and Pony Podcast, presented by Hometown Roofing. Put your trust in us and powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Here's Bob Pompieni from KDKA-TV and Andrew Filippone from 93.7 The Fan.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Pomp and Pony Podcast. Bob Pompieni, Andrew Filippone, and we are honored to be joined by Hall of Famer to be. He'll be enshrined this summer, Alan Faneca. After 6 years of waiting, and quite frankly, he should have been in, I thought, way earlier than this, but life of being a guard on an offensive lineman, I guess, Andrew. A lot of times you're there in anonymity, but Alan stood out. And Alan, first of all, congratulations. Well-deserved, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate it.
Alan, I want to ask you, for starters, so you had to sit on this thing for 2 weeks. Did I hear that story right? You had to keep a secret?
You heard that right, man. We've been sitting on it for 2 weeks. It's been hard holding it in.
So did this – he's a giant human being, Bob. Have you seen this guy?
David, I know David Baker. He's like 6'8".
So did he just randomly show up at your house, Alan? Did you get a phone call in advance like, hey, expect a visitor? You take us through that whole notion because, I mean, people aren't exactly getting together right now, Bob. So to have someone randomly pop in, I'm curious about that whole situation.
So on top of us having to sit on this for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. Julie had to sit on this for about 12 hours by herself.
Oh.
David texted her the day before, the night before, and said, literally the text only said, Julie told me, said, can you keep a secret? And Julie responded, whatever you need me to do, I will do. And so they talked, and I didn't know anything. David was coming in the next day and just needed to set up where I was going to be, so that they could show up and surprise me. And Julie came up with the idea of a ruse and got me dressed up so we were going to go to lunch. And so late morning, we're about to head out with some family and just go grab some brunch. And all of a sudden, instead of going to brunch, David Baker's knocking on my
door.
And
you didn't think it was a setup, Alan? You didn't have a hunch or a sense that there was something going on when she made that arrangement?
You know, I was kind of busy. I've been doing some stuff with at my wood shop, and I was kind of trying to rush and finish up a project. And it sounded a little bit, and I was like, "Yeah, let's go do." But you know what? So it's my brother-in-law that lives a mile from me, and literally every weekend they probably go to brunch like twice a week, twice a weekend. That's what they do. So I was like, "Yeah, let's go join them for once."
So there it is, and you had no suspicion whatsoever. Everyone waits for that knock. No one ever expects it coming at your house.
You're great with secrets, Bob. You could have kept that one.
Oh, I keep secrets. I have.
You're
If I had to write a book, it'd be called "You Can't Make This Shit Up." That would be the name of the book. I have a lot of secrets, but anyway. So when you heard the knock, you answered the door. How did she get you to answer the door, and why didn't she answer the door? I know why, but what did she tell you?
So I was not too far away from the door, and we were kind of, Julie and I were in the hallway away from each other and facing each other. I was just kind of walking around killing time, really. We were waiting for everybody to get in the car and let's go. And exactly when David started pounding on the door, because it's not just a regular knock, it's a pounding knock. I caught the corner of the window, just like a 1 foot section of like the boom mic from the camera crew out there. And I was like, oh man, I say they got me. And I kind of froze for a second, and he had to knock again. So I actually went and answered the door, because I was like, I just didn't know what to do kind of at the moment. And then I went and answered the door.
Everyone waits for that knock. You get the knock. How did it feel to get the knock?
It felt good. It felt good, man. You know, it was exciting and a relief that he came. It was a surprise. It caught me off guard. You know, I kind of had it in my mind. I was like, if something happens, it's going to happen like really close to the Super Bowl. I figured, you know, maybe a couple days out. I totally did not expect it. I kept pushing. My daughter Annabelle was going to go with a friend and go do something that day and get out. And she hadn't done anything in forever. And I was like, you need to go. And this was before Julie knew. Julie was like, well, what if something happens? And I was like, it's not happening this weekend. Nothing. It's going to wait till next week or something. And that's before Julie even knew.
Are you, know, this is 6 years. And Andrew, I got to imagine, you know, I thought he would be in much sooner than this, but it's a difficult road just because there's so many qualified people, plus guards on offensive line. There aren't that many in the Hall of Fame. Did you take any of it personally, Alan, that it wasn't happening? Or how did you handle this whole waiting game?
I didn't take it personally, but, you know, it is frustrating when you're going through it. It is a kind of a little bit of a political process and a jockeying, that aspect of it. You know, rubs you a little wrong when you get the phone call that says you're not in instead of the knock. So it's a little rough, man. And then you add in family and kids and everybody's dealing with it. It doesn't make it any easier of a situation. So, you know, the kids are old enough. They know and understand. And, you know, it's not, you know, every year it gets a little bit more of a kick to the groin. So glad it's over with, and you know, we can move forward. And it's just been exciting.
Alan, was the woodworking a diversion? Is this something you came up with to get your mind off of football and things like the Hall of Fame, or has that been like a passion for you for a long time?
It's been a bucket list thing of mine for a long time. I've always kind of dabbled in it, and you know, kind of worked out of the garage and did some stuff, and
That's one more thing you've got in common with Pompeiani, because he's into – Bob, you want to tell him about your woodworking fetish?
Sure. No. I have a woodpecker, Alan. If you'd like to come and kill him, you can do that for me. I'm not allowed to do it because I'd be arrested, but the woodpecker's driving me nuts.
Oh, man. Come on now.
So you just kind of dabbled in woodworking? Okay.
Yeah. So I finally I did it about a month before we had got locked down in this freaking quarantine, and I've got some equipment now, and I got a little wood shop down the road, and I go in there, and I'm know enough to be dangerous, so I enjoy it, though. I go in there, and I figure it out, and I'm learning.
It's the Hometown Roofing Pop and Pony podcast, powered by Bowser Chevrolet.
So, I want to talk about your career now. We'll zero in on that, and the fact that for 13 years, I look at a lot of different things that I think make you a Hall of Fame guy right from the beginning. I would have had you in the first year. But the one thing that you can look at a lot of statistics, a lot of things, I thought your pooling ability was something that was very different than most guards that pool or any offensive lineman. You had that ability with your speed to do things that others couldn't. How much of that was the coaching staff saying, hey, man, you're different. We're going to utilize this. How much of it is just you being comfortable doing it? Tell us about that.
You know, I think when Russ got there, I think he's the one that said, hey, we got this, you know, we got this guy that can do it. Let's do it more. And it really took off, they really, really utilized me. Very, very, I mean, how many offenses in the NFL, would have used me the way that I got used in Pittsburgh? And I would have been, you know, showcased and put on the point of attack. You know, I think a lot of teams just knew to follow me to the ball. And back then, you know, it didn't really matter. We had such a good running attack that we were able to still do it. But it's a violent act of pulling it and throwing yourself in there, and you can't be timid, and you got to kind of have a feel for. Kind of like it's a lot as if you have the ball and you're the running back, you know, like you follow me. And so you got to look at it and see it just as Jerome would. So it's definitely a little bit of a knack to do it.
Alan, where did that attitude come from? Where did it have to get ingrained in you? Were you born with it? Is there someone along the way that turned you into that type of not only player, but person where you sought out physicality? Like, give us a little bit of a backstory into how Alan Faneca developed that type of personality.
You know, I think I can look back and point to a couple things along the way that, you know, kind of added to it and kind of built it up to who it was inside of me. You know, I can think back to, you know, I really loved playing basketball when I was a kid, man. And it's, you know, it's not easy for a big guy, and you got a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of hustle in basketball. And I can think back to moments of, you know, being near broken, you know, conditioning and running and training and doing things, playing basketball as a, you know, a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid that ingrained me to just say, screw it, man. No way. You're not going to break me. I'm going to keep going. And then, you know, you take that attitude with you, you know, to maybe junior high or high school, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got the chance to play against older guys, you know, as a young guy in high school, and just determination and not let that happen. And it just starts to snowball. And, you know, you get into college and, you know, it's just a totally different game. Everybody's better on the field than they are in high school. And you're not dominating people like you did in high school. And you just have to even kind of take it up another notch. And so, you know, as you go along through the path of a football career like I have, you know, it just starts amping up every step you go.
Alan, how nasty do you have to be to play on the offensive line, or for that matter, the defensive line, in those trenches? You strike me as a, you know, like, I always see you at Glimmer Hope Foundation events here in Pittsburgh, and you're always so cordial to people. You're nice. And
gentleman,
a total gentleman, and he always said, but I'm sure when you get on the field, you can't be a gentleman. So how nasty is it down there?
You got to flip a switch. You have to flip a switch. You know, it's interesting. Nobody really gets to see the like a locker room, and everybody has different ways that they get ready for a game. And you know, man, I had a playlist. I put my headset on. I had my routine. I did. And, you know, there's a certain point where I just, like, I tune out, man. I'm out. I got my music going. I got my mind. I'm thinking about the game. I'm taping up my wrist. And it's a little bit like the calm before the storm, you know, just still who I am, that same guy that you're talking about, Bob. But, you know, it's starting to build up in you that you're about to go out there and play this this violent sport and go out there and get after it. It's, you know, it's... There's nothing else like it in the world. You can never do that. You know, you go do all that stuff on the street, you're going to get arrested. So, you know, you might as well go do it in front of 80,000 people and have fun with it.
And they're cheering you on to do it.
Alan, is that the same playlist you use to run those marathons? You got the same music in your headset when you're running?
Different. It's a different playset. That's a whole different mindset.
How did you become, because we've all seen pictures, we've all seen stories of you post-football. How did Alan Faneca transition from one of the most ferocious guards in NFL history to marathon runner?
You know what? I just always said I was going to lose the weight when I was done, and we'll see if it stuck. And then I lost the weight before I started really running after playing. But, you know, I always ran for time when I was playing. But that was like the first thing I would do. I would do... You know, depending on when the season ended, I would do it for maybe 4 to 6 weeks. I would just jog. I would go for jogs for time, not for distance. And so I was always kind of into that distance type running. And Julie ran a half marathon, and I wouldn't do any of it with her. I just let her do it. All she did it with some friends, and I was like, I'm good. I'm done. And I went with her to go run it. They ran it in Las Vegas, and I was like, I kind of got the little vibe of them doing it. So I started running some of her shorter runs with her afterwards. And one day Julie wasn't feeling good, and you know, instead of making a right, I made a left, and you know, it turned like a 3 mile run into like a 7 or 8 mile run. I had no idea when I made that left. So it was really painful, and it took a lot to get to the finish line to get back to my car. But, you know, it kind of it revved the competitive juices up back in me that had been kind of like just dormant since I retired. And that's how I kind of got into it. And then I just started taking off running longer runs by myself. And next thing you know, I'm running a marathon.
So I'm asking for a friend. Is it tougher to take the weight off or keep it off? I need
is that
do,
friend Bob?
That friend is me, yes. I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of these love handles. I wish the love handles could be in use more, but they're not. So I,
yeah.
How do I do it?
It's definitely harder to get them off than it is to keep them off. So, that's the hard part. Now, you know what I tell people, man? I was cheating because I did it right when I was done, and it was like training for another season. I was just doing different things, and I'm not too sure I could pull it off right now. For sure, I would have not done it. I cannot do it as fast as I did it back then.
Alan, was the weight loss thing like a diet or a lifestyle decision? Was it more of like you're very regimented for a short amount of time, or is it something that now defines who you are as a person post-football?
I think it defines me a little bit. You know, I'll look at pictures and see me like I'm in my room, my office right now. You know, I mean, I know who that guy is, but you know, it's definitely like it's weird. I relate more to the new guy that's a lot less, a lot lighter in pounds. So it's definitely interesting. But you know, I always said I wanted to lose the weight. I probably didn't need to be 50 years old, walking around with 320 pounds sitting on me. So. It's definitely good on my joints, and it's definitely going to be better for the long run.
Was exercise the number one thing, or was it something else that really allowed for you to get down?
So when I was doing it heavy, right when I was going through it, I lost 70 pounds in 3 months, first 3 months. I ate about 1,800 to 2,000 calories a day, and I did an hour of hard cardio 6 days a week. And just really stuck to it, and just you know, I tell a lot of people, sometimes it's hard to get to that point where you notice your clothes, you need new clothes, or it takes a lot of effort to get to like to that 15-20 pound mark where you really start to notice some things that really is like, oh, that's a good thing. And I feel like a lot of people fall short before they can get to that feeling, whatever that pound weight loss is.
What's a cheat meal for Alan Faneca now? If Alan wants to, ignore the dietary rules and regulations and wants to branch out and eat whatever he wants, what's a cheat meal for Alan Faneca look like?
Oh, man, it's probably going to eat some Mexican food something like that. I got three kids, so pizza's always coming to the freaking house. So. something like that. My regimen these days is I really watch what I eat and maintain good habits Monday through Friday afternoon, and then don't really pay attention from that point through Saturday, Sunday.
Since we're talking about food, I have this real quick question. Edmund Nelson used to be a broadcast partner of mine, and he would eat at times up into 40 ounces of meat when we went out. I don't think KDK liked the tab on that, by the way. And maybe it was turned back to him. But what is when Alan was at his, playing best, and when weight was not a problem, you could put on. What was the most you can ever consume?
People used to always tell me they were surprised I didn't eat as much as I look like I should be eating. I guess because I always ate multiple meals, I was always eating between meals and. The one thing I miss are my shakes. I used to eat these shakes, especially in the off season. I'd eat two or three a day because of all the running and lifting and training. And I never counted anything about them. And so once I started losing some weight, and I was like, man, I wouldn't mind some of those shakes. And that's the first time I ever sat down and like added up the calories on them. And the calories, it was about 800 to 1,000 calories in this freaking shake I was drinking. And I was eating like two or three a day. Whole milk, peanut butter, the whole shebang. It was freaking good. It's the best peanut butter chocolate shake you ever had.
Well, I could use a few of those because I think I do that. I just eat peanut butter raw out of the can jar. I want to ask you, Alan, about post-football, because I think you can have a career in consulting if you would like, and that would be how to consult and how to help offensive linemen to stop holding. You only had 4 holding calls, I think, in your entire career, which is stunning to me. It's 13 years. You played just about every game. I think missed just one. How did you not get caught holding more? What's the trick?
I'm going to dispute that number two, Bob. I don't think that's an actual number.
Less.
I think that's a little high.
Wow. Oh, okay.
So what was your secret?
There is definitely a – so – there's definitely a knack for holding and knowing when to let go. And there's also a knack for knowing kind of getting your hands in. I mean, we're allowed to hold on the inside. As long as you're on the inside, there's definitely it's not an acting job, but it's just a matter of knowing what you can and cannot get away with that you have to have a knack for it. And you kind of got to know, all right, the refs are over here, they're over there. And it's another part of the craft you got to study to know and get used to it.
Alan, one last thing for me here. You've had so many different looks over the years. Now you're clean shaven. I remember you had the nice sideburns there for a while, yeah. Bob, the goatee.
He's a handsome man, no matter how you shake it.
No doubt about it.
I mean, he looks like a movie star now.
I wish this was a video cast and not just an audio thing. What makes you go clean shaven now, Alan? Is that your call? Is that Mrs. Faneca's call? What's up with the new look Alan Faneca these days?
I don't know. I always go through cycles, and I think Julie does make it a little bit harder to go to the cycles of facial hair again. She kind of fights me in the growth stages. I don't know. It's just always kind of fluctuated looking through the years. When we got measured for the bus this weekend, I had no idea that we actually get to choose what we look like in the bus.
What are you going to go with? Do you know?
I don't know. There's lots of choices out there, I think. I had many a look playing, so it was interesting. I had no idea. So we started flipping through pictures.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, she's going to have a big say in that, I'm sure. So probably your kids will too. Have you decided about presenter or some? I didn't hear if you had or not, but who would be that person for you?
I've got a couple people in mind. It's really tough. A couple of the guys have decided, and a couple of them are like me. They've got it down to two or three people that they're thinking hard about and trying to pull the trigger. So that's where I'm at. There's so many people that mean a lot to me that helped me in this journey that it's really hard to pick one. So it's really kind of like picking the best one of a group that represents the whole group to me is how I'm thinking about it. It's an honor to pick somebody. I've thought about it, just picking the person, but actually having the awesome conversation of telling them a little bit, kind of like, it's a little bit like their knock at the door, right? That's that's another special moment.
That'd be a good way to do it. Knock on someone's door and say, "You're my presenter." I think that's awesome. Alan, we just want to wish you the best. The man who had such a significant block in the Willie Parker 75-yard touchdown, which is still the longest touchdown run in Super Bowl history. A man who switched positions because of an emergency, and that couldn't be hard to do. But all of these are reasons why you're going into the Hall of Fame. It is your just reward for an outstanding career. And I was glad to see that the Virginia Beach community stepped up on a homecoming when you came back from the Super Bowl, right? They were all out there with signs in the streets. Ooh. It was pretty interesting. And that's when you began your consumption of a whole bunch of food and champagne, I also noticed. So you had a big celebration down there. You deserve it.
It was great. Thank you, Bob.
All right. That's Alan Faneca. Andrew, always good to talk to him. We look forward to seeing you in August.
Totally. Absolutely.
You've been listening to the Hometown Roofing Pomp and Pony Podcast. Hometown Roofing, put your trust in us at Powered by Bowser Chevrolet. Join us each week for another Hometown Roofing Pomp and Pony Podcast.